The following seminar was recorded at the Worship God West 2014 conference and features Brock Scheinen. It's entitled Songwriters and the Church, Navigating the Legal, Ethical, and Practical Issues of Music in the Church.
So my name is Brock Scheinen. We're going to talk about songwriters in the church, and this seminar is going to focus on the church's perspective, but because it's a relatively small group of people, I don't mind if you want to go a little off topic. If you want to talk about, well, hey, I don't care what the church thinks, what about me? That's fine too. But I do want to try and process through some of it just in case there are people. Well, let me ask you this. Who in this room is on staff but not a worship leader? They're on staff at a church but not as a worship leader? Okay. And so everybody else is on staff as a worship leader?
No.
Okay. So you're on staff.
Not on staff, not a worship leader.
Just curious about songwriting. Okay. So for somebody like you, is your curiosity on this topic more like, what are the issues I'm going to deal with in the church if I'm letting my songs be played and stuff in the church? Okay. Is that a representative of what most people in the room are thinking?
I guess I'm kind of thinking I am a worship leader at the church, but I'm thinking like, so we just recorded a CD of original music for the first time. So it was kind of like navigating some of the issues on that. And if we want to do that again in the future,
yeah,
how can we do that better, be a little more organized?
Yeah.
Things like
that. Okay.
And not just thinking about me doing it, recording songs, but, you know, we've got other songwriters. If that starts to happen more,
yeah,
that's the best way to structure that.
That's perfect. Okay. Let's do it this way. I feel like, you know, with this small of a group, we can have a lot more flexibility. Some of you heard me say this, some of you didn't. So if you look at the outline and you feel like, hey, I want to go off topic, it's fine. So just interrupt me if it leads to other issues or if you want to focus in on an issue. So I'm going to go through the first two issues quickly so that we can kind of set up. This will get into more what you're talking about and what you're talking about too. So thanks, guys. Intro. We need songwriters for a lot of reasons in the church. I think now churches are looking even just from a resource perspective. You know, how can we add more to the budget? And that's not a bad thing. It can be a bad thing, but just in and of itself, it's not a bad thing. Since you're all songwriters or worship leaders, whether you're on staff or not, you need to think about why does the church want to interact with you? And part of it is relevance. You know, there are churches that I represent that they want songwriters on staff. They want well-known worship leaders on staff because for them, it adds a component of relevance to what they're doing. It adds a piece of, you know, if it's that person on stage, we're more likely to get more people in the seats. So part of your job is to understand why the church wants you songwriting, wants you recording, wants you leading worship, because it's going to help navigate some of the problems that are going to come as you do that kind of stuff. Because if you're thinking, well, all they want is to raise money, which is not a bad thing, they need money for the budget, then that's going to help you dictate when you're negotiating, however your songwriting ownership or your recording ownership works, it's going to help you figure out where the pressure points are. Songwriting, I said, and some of this is going to be overlap because I know a few of you were in the earlier session. Songwriting, as opposed to the other church activities, because most worship leaders are also songwriters, it's all overlapped. And so when you're worship leading, you're necessarily including like songwriting in the conversation. But just understand, the church doesn't necessarily get that. And this is one of the biggest struggles that I have in when I represent the worship leaders. Their churches have no concept for like the separation of songs and recordings. They have no concept for how do we properly compensate an artist? How do we properly compensate a songwriter? What's fair for us in terms of the recording? What if we, you know, fronted the budget and we need to recoup the budget? So I'm saying all this because it's important for you guys to realize if your church is interacting with you on this level, they're going to know much less than you do about how this all works. They're not going to know most of the time. They're not going to have any clue for what are proper royalties, what are proper compensation structures, what are proper ownership. And the worst case scenario is you get into where you believe you're all on the same page, you make some albums together, and then you realize we were never on the same page, and they don't want to pay royalties, or the royalty that you thought it was 15 and they think it was 2, percent, you know, stuff like that. Sorry, I keep getting hung up on this. So the pros and cons from the church's perspective are they're going to add a revenue stream. They're going to add a revenue stream potentially to the church from songwriting and recording. The downside is this is just another layer of complication, a relational complication. You know, you have worship leaders that now have to navigate, well, if I write this song on the clock, my church might want to own it. If I record it with the church, they want to own it. You know, I could bring in a finished CD and maybe license it to the church, and then they won't own it. You know, the whole relationship just gets a little complicated. So let's jump into authorship. This is really important for you guys. Determining the author is going to be critical for you, because if you stand up on stage and you're performing, whether guitar or whatever, you're leading worship and the church is recording it, the chances are that they're going to own that recording. Now, that's one thing if you're talking about Sunday worship, but you just said, you know, hey, we did an album, and there may have been conversations about, oh, you're going to get a piece of that, right? Or you're going to have an interest in the album. You don't know what the church means by that when they say that, because you guys are experienced in this industry where they are not. And so they're thinking, well, we'll cut you a check for $500. And you're thinking, I don't want $500. You know, I want an artist royalty. I want a songwriter royalty. So one of the biggest things going into this is making sure that you communicate well with the church, with the leadership, whether that's a board or it's just your pastor or pastoral team, whatever. And before you ever submit a song to your church to play on Sunday, before you ever say, yes, let's do an album, you should understand who's going to own that stuff. Because if you don't, now if your expectation is they will, and that's where you're coming from, they'll own anything I do, then that's fine. Sorry. But if you think you're going to own any part of it, then you really need to be in a place where you're having the conversation, like, who's going to own this stuff? In the church context, if you're on staff, there's always the work for hire issue. The idea being, if you're a worship leader and you're recording or writing songs, the church always has the argument that they own everything you do. And if you say, well, yeah, but I wrote this after hours, can you prove it? And that's another issue that comes up. And I've had cases where the songwriter person couldn't prove that they weren't writing off the clock. And there were people that would come in and say, well, I knew you were in your office. Like, I saw you on your office on your laptop. And yeah, it's your personal laptop, but it was like 2:30 in the afternoon and you were typing. And I know you weren't like working on this other stuff. You never know. And I don't mean this in a bad way, but you never know who's going to be making the argument against you that you didn't create it offsite or without using church resources. So it's better to just have the conversation with your church. Who's going to own this stuff? You always want to distinguish your songs from your recordings, and whether it's your recordings that you're bringing in and letting the church sell or maybe polish up and then sell versus the stuff that the church is going to record. And just because the church is recording it and even funding it doesn't mean necessarily that you shouldn't have an ownership piece in it. But on the recording side, the default may be whoever funds it owns it. But in songwriting, the default should be, from your perspective, that you own it as songwriters. And so make that crystal clear in writing with the church. If you're a volunteer or an independent contractor, there are different rules that will most likely apply. On the independent contractor side, are any of you independent contractors? No? Okay, any of you volunteers in that capacity? You are? So in the volunteer capacity, there is an argument to be made that volunteers should be treated as employees. And cases have said in the copyright context that if you're volunteering and leading worship or whatever, like even on an album, that the church should own everything because you're treated as an employee. There are other cases that say, no, you're an independent contractor. The default law with independent contractors is without a written agreement, you guys own your stuff. And so that's really important. It's an important distinction between employees and independent contractors / volunteers. But when it comes to the recording, you actually have a lot more leverage to say, well, my creative contribution to the recording is something I should own because I'm an independent contractor, which is very different than all the employees here where they wouldn't have started with ownership in the first place. So factor that in. At the end of the day, if you're having to fight with your church about this kind of stuff, there's probably a deeper issue, a more problematic relationship. But I think absolutely you should be having the conversation about how am I going to be treated on this in terms of ownership and compensation. Those are going to be your two biggies, right? So skip to section 3 on the employment issues. Let me just look at my notes here. We talked about the default law for employees versus independent contractors. Now, if you're an independent contractor and the church gives you a contract and it says that whatever you're recording for us or whatever you're writing for us, we own, then you got to think about it logically. You know, it's not default anymore because it's an actual contract. But what most churches don't know, unless they have an IP or an entertainment attorney, is that even with written contracts with independent contractors, and I'm saying this to you guys, even though you said you're volunteers, because you would most likely be treated as independent contractors in that context. They will only own it if it fits certain criteria in copyright law, which is it has to be in writing, you have to sign it, and it has to be either for a contribution to a collective work or a compilation, or there's a couple other things like an atlas or a test or an answer to a test. If it doesn't fit any of those things, even if the contract says we own it, we being the church, you guys would still have an argument that you own it, whatever that creation was. So that puts a lot of power in your hands, but it's not a power you want to wield because you don't want that tension between the church, right? Because all they'll do is say, well, then we're not going to promote it, we're not going to sell it, and we're going to excommunicate you, right? So it's better to work out those issues. Scope of duties, this comes up with employees when you're hired as a worship leader. You got to understand, are you hired to write songs? Are you hired to record albums? Or are you just hired to actually stand on stage on Saturday night and Sundays to lead? So you need to understand what your actual job duties are, what the scope of those duties is, because if it's all encompassing, even songwriting might be included. But if it says specifically your only job is to stand on the stage and strum and sing, then arguably anything else you do related to music is not going to be owned by the church. So if I was in your position as employees, I would want to know very specific, what are my job duties? And I would go so far as to say, when it comes to copyright ownership, what's our deal? Do I own the copyrights? Do you? You know, maybe they say, oh, well, we need to take it case by case, but you better have that conversation because the assumption is going to be the church has power over you. And I've seen it a million times. The church will exert that power over you and say, you're doing the wrong thing, you're being rebellious, you're being, you know, selfish or whatever. That's why you don't want to be in that situation where they have to say that to you. You want to know the deal going into it. Oh, sorry, I thought you raised your hand. Compensation, let me get into the compensation issue when we talk more about, like, if you're doing albums and stuff. But for the most part, you have to understand your church has no idea how to compensate you. So you're going to have to educate them. And in the process, you're going to have to make it objective. You can't be like, well, hey, normally artists get 25%. Because first of all, it's not true. And second of all, because as soon as you give them misinformation, they're not going to trust anything else that comes out of your mouth on this topic. And so it's better for you to say, look, I've talked to, 20 different worship leaders that are doing albums, and every single one of them are getting an artist royalty between 12% and 18%. So we should be in that range. Every single one of them get to own their own songs. We should be, doing the same thing. And that way you're coming from a place of being objective instead of trying to manipulate them, which will work against you. The church is going to have to deal with this private benefit these nonprofit issues like private benefit and what's a fair market standard, because as soon as they do an album with you or as soon as they start paying you royalties, the church is actually at risk with its nonprofit status. And I've had a lot of worship leaders that come to me and say, hey, I want to do an album with the church, but I don't want to risk their nonprofit status. So you shouldn't take responsibility for that, because first of all, you don't necessarily know how to navigate that. Second of all, it is the church's responsibility. But if you know and they don't, then you need to raise the question. I think that's fair. Just say, hey, how is this going to affect our nonprofit status, if it will? And if they have the answer, don't worry about it. We've walked through this with our tax attorney or whatever. Then you're good to go. But at least consider the fact that you may be taxed. You'll be taxed anyways, because as soon as the church is paying you royalties, that's personal income to you, right? How many of you have personal ministries, 501c3s, that are set up for you to receive income. Anybody? Okay. So if you did, that there's a different issue there. But if you, since you don't, then you, for you, it doesn't make a difference. All income paid to you, whether it's in the form of salary, hourly, flat fees, royalties, whatever, it's still personal income and you're going to be taxed on it. But the church can have serious tax implications by not dealing with these questions. The church is also going to be struggling with PR issues, meaning how do other churches perceive the fact that we're paying our writers, that we're paying our songwriters, our artists royalties and that sort of thing. So you can help with that conversation. If you know other churches that have done it, if you know circumstances where, hey, here's 10 examples of other churches that have navigated this and they've done it well. And I think, sorry, because I'm starting to forget what I said earlier versus what I said just now. But like Jesus Culture is one of my clients. Bethel Music is one of my clients. These are churches and they've had to navigate this like, wait, are you guys a label? Are you guys worship leaders? Do you do this on Sunday? Is this a full-time thing? Do you get paid separately? Do you not get paid separately? We've had to navigate all that stuff. And it's not just internally an issue. Externally, there are people that say, that guy's making royalties. You know, that guy's got a new car. You know, that guy's got a new guitar that I know is a $5,000 guitar. There are people that start to have issues with that kind of thing. And the one thing you need to consider is that the church is going to struggle with these PR issues. And so I'm not saying it's your problem. I'm not saying it's your responsibility, but you need to consider that you're not having a conversation with another industry knowledgeable person. You're having a conversation with a church that's mostly focused on ministry and nonprofit issues, supposedly, which means you're going to have to educate them at the same time trying to protect yourself. So PR is a big issue, and you need to help them navigate that. And you're in a great position because you can say, I know 20 other worship leaders that have done the same thing with their church, and you walk them through it. You help them feel better about it. So the last piece on the employment issues is just with respect to what you will start to see is hopefully not, but usually what you see is division. You'll see, well, why does the worship leader get royalties and the drummer doesn't? Why does, you know, the pianist get more or less than the guitarist? Why does the worship department even get outside money when no one else in the church does? So for you guys, that's great because you can generate another stream of income from songwriting and recording in the church context. But you have to understand your counterparts in the ministry may be like, that's a load of, you know what, like why, you know, maybe the guy in accounting just wrote a ministry book, but the church said, hey, that's our book. And they only paid him $500 and no royalties. That person may feel a little jealous, may feel a little like, well, I'm going to talk to leadership about this because you can't get away with this. So at least come with the perspective that as you're being treated differently, because I'm telling you, I represent a lot of churches all over this country. The music department is treated differently than everybody else typically. They have different rules. They have different income flows and all that sort of thing. So you have to expect that there may be people having issues with that and raising that with leadership. You have to be prepared to navigate that. Why is it fair to give you a songwriter royalty if they just took a book from another, like the children's pastor, and they don't give that children's pastor any royalties? Why? Maybe you don't have the answer, but understand you got to anticipate these kinds of issues coming up. For you, and this is starting to get into your questions or the topic about you want to do albums with your church, right? And so, or you have, or, you know, whatever it is. You got to set and then you got to maintain the expectations. And so I'm just going to line through and we could talk through any of them that you want me to stop on. Always start with some form of written agreement. And when I say that, I don't mean like the expectation that you have a 50-page agreement. I mean, it could be one page. For me, as a lawyer, I can navigate with anything that's understandable. But when there's nothing, that's where, well, what did you think and what did they say? And then what did you think and what did they say? And so that you can go all day with that. But if I have one piece of paper and it says that, you know, you, Joel, own all the songs, I can take that to the church and I could be your proponent and say, well, why did you agree to this? I could say that to the pastor. And the pastor's saying, well, we didn't really mean it. That puts me in a position to be able to sort of mediate the expectations there. But that's why you should always start with a written agreement, because it makes it a lot harder for you to say, I thought I was going to do this and I thought I was going to get that, when they're thinking something totally different. So whatever your expectations are, get them in writing. Even if it's bullet points, even if it's in an email, even if it's in a text, I don't care. You know, you're going to have some people like, no, we have to have a 30-page agreement, and it's got to be like reviewed by each side has to have a lawyer. That's fine, but how many people are actually going to follow through with that, right? And in your context, you're going to have to deal with, wait, if I hire a lawyer, I'm going to have to pay for that. Shouldn't the church pay for that? And then the church is saying, well, we don't want to pay for your lawyer. We want our own lawyer. It just gets complicated. So what I say is bullet point it. Now, I'm not talking you out of getting a lawyer. I am a lawyer. This is part of how I make my living. But what I am saying is don't pass over the written part just because you don't want to spend the money or complicate the issue. Sit down and get it in bullet points at minimum, right? You want to, if you're the church, and none of you guys are the pastoral leadership, so I'm going to change some of this. You want to make sure that everything is clear and consistent. If you write songs today, is there a different rule that, if you write them on Sunday, is there a different rule if you write them during work versus not during work? If you use a church laptop versus your own laptop or the church equipment? Because, you know, practically speaking, a lot of times I'm guessing that a lot of you guys are actually writing songs during work hours and most likely using church equipment, right? You may even be hitting record while you're, on stage or in one of the rooms using everything that's the church's. And I'm not saying that's bad or wrong. There's no judgment here, and it's not even that there's a judgment to be made. What I'm saying is you have to recognize that puts you in a position to have to defend, well, I'm supposed to own this stuff, and the church, you just handed the church a reason to say, no, you don't, we do. So make sure that the policies are clear. And if the policy is that you own whatever intellectual property you create, make sure that covers the specifics of songs, lyrics, melodies. Maybe it's music only. Maybe it's lyrics only. Make sure what it covers. Sometimes your church is going to have a written policy, and sometimes you're going to sign an employment contract that completely contradicts whatever they're telling you. And I will tell you as a lawyer that when I can see something in writing, a contract that you sign that says, this is my employment agreement, and my employer owns everything I write, and then you're telling me that, no, but the board said I can own it all. What do you think a judge is going to say? A judge is going to say, here's what I can see, and here's what you're telling me. I'm going to believe what I can see, right? So for your own sake, if you sign employment agreements, if you know there's an employee handbook, if you know there's an IP policy or anything, any form of policy that the church has, make yourself aware of it. And if it's inconsistent with what they're telling you, you need to have them put something in writing that they've deviated from the policy and they're allowing you to own or whatever. So this will kind of lead us into the last part and just Q&A and whatever you guys want to talk about. When a church wants to get into recording, making albums, or trying to act as a publisher, which I'm telling you, I'm getting more and more and more calls from churches that want to do that. There's a lot of complications that, and you probably have some specifics you could even, if you felt comfortable, could even share. But some of it's going to be, well, how do we figure out who gets paid what? How do we figure out who's more valuable? And I hate to say it, but why do you give a male worship leader a percentage and give a female worship leader a different percentage? I mean, that's something that you could struggle with. Or why do you give one type of musician more money than another type of musician? But the reality is, this is happening in the industry, not even in the church, just outside in the industry. Typically, your drummer's not going to get paid what your guitarist might be in that whole frontman thing. And it's understandable. There's an argument for it. But what you have to understand, again, the biggest piece is that your church doesn't know any of this stuff. Or if they do, they're probably misinformed. So you're going to have to inform them on is, hey, let's do an album. Let's start there. What's that going to look like? Well, you want to know who's going to pay for the album. Who's going to pay for the recording? Is there a budget? And they say, sure, there's a budget. It's $5,000. Can we pull off an album with $5,000? Well, maybe we can do an EP. Maybe we could do three songs. As you talk through these questions, it's going to illuminate things for them. Oh, so it actually costs more than $5,000 to make an album? And then you're able to say, yeah, it's going to cost $50,000. And you're thinking, because with $50,000, I could, do this and that and have this, producer. So what I see in terms of the disputes that come to me, either the worship leaders of the church that say, hey, help us, it a lot of times starts right there in that conversation. because they're saying, well, we feel like our worship leader is manipulating us into this situation where we're supposed to put up 50,000 and we have it, but is that right? And I say, I'm not a worship leader making albums for you. That may be right, you know, but $5,000 might be right too. And so they're going to ask these kinds of questions that if you haven't given them straightforward answers, you have nothing to fall back on. So look at, what does the church want to do? Do they just want to do one album, or do they want to become a record label? Do they want to create a publishing company? If they want to do one album, my thinking is do it really simple. Do a one-page contract that says, we're going to record on this day. These are going to be the leaders, and these are going to be the musicians. This is who's going to get flat rates. These are people that are going to get royalties. These are the royalties they're going to get. This is when the album's going to be released. This is where creative control lands. You know, because think about it. The church is saying, well, we want this particular expression, but we trust you, but we want the final say. And you're saying, well, I'm the worship leader. Like, I have the final say. And you, like, the church isn't in the business of knowing what's good music, right? You guys are. So you're going to have to navigate that. My thinking is, in terms of creative control, you should probably have it as a worship leader, but you have to understand, if they're writing the checks, they're going to feel entitled to have that. So be ready for that conversation. If it's a one-album deal, how is it going to get promoted? Are they just going to record the album and say, okay, now what do we do? And you're like, I don't know. You guys are the label. What are you going to do? You're going to manufacture 10,000 units, or are you going to go try and get a deal with Capitol or Integrity or Sony to distribute it, or maybe even to partner up and do like an artist deal with a larger label? These are the kinds of questions that come up. And if you don't know the answer to them, how can you expect the church to trust you that you're giving them the best advice to how to proceed forward? So what I suggest, even with a single project, is go into it saying, in your head, knowing how this all maps out. You know, when you're going to record the album, look at all the budget and the production type stuff. Who's involved, your producers, what everybody gets paid. You know, maybe you go for a full-blown P&L on the album, that sort of thing. Figure that out. Next step, figure out, how are we going to get this out there? Do we need marketing money? You know, some churches have amazing teams of people who can build websites and build apps. And there's, you know, amongst the team, you know, there's a couple million followers, and we're just going to blast social media. But most churches have no clue how to do that. And most churches don't. I mean, the average church in America is something under 500 people. So when you think like, oh, there's Saddleback or, you know, Eastside or whatever's around here, you know, and has 20,000 people, that's not the average. That's the exception to the rule. And so is anyone in here in a church over 1,000? And then how over 5,000? Okay, so you guys are in churches under 5,000 people where budgets could be a significant issue, right? I mean, if you don't have to tell me any details, but is 50,000 a reasonable budget for your church for an album?
I don't even know. I think everybody would be surprised if that was a number that was brought up.
Yeah. What would they say if you said a number? They'd be like, "Oh, that sounds right." What would that be? 1,000?
I'd say anything under 5,000 would be something they would consider reasonable.
Is that everybody else in the room? Does that sound the same? I'm really struggling with this thing, driving me nuts. So 5,000, you know, if any of you've recorded on your own, you know, you can make an album for free. But, you know, once you hire a producer, especially a producer that's known, you're going to have to pay them a fee that may take up the whole five, right? You need mixing and mastering, which most churches can't do in-house, right? And so 5,000 is, you're going to have to stretch. You have to call in favors, right? You're going to have people like really throw in their talent. And that's a tough thing because churches don't get it. They don't like, well, I can buy a piece of machinery that I can actually see work, but you're going to give me an album with $5,000. That's going to be the output, is this master. And, you know, how are we going to make money off that? How are we going to get our $5,000 back? So when you say, well, we're going to sell it, how are you going to sell it? Are you going to just upload it to CD Baby or TuneCore and just like, let's let it rip? Because who's going to find you on CD Baby, TuneCore, which is ultimately iTunes? Who's going to find you? The people in your congregation? I'm not going to find you because you're competing against Lady Gaga and Hillsong and everybody else, right? So unless I know what I'm looking for, unless you get lucky with your banners popping up, I'm never going to find you. No one outside of your fold is ever going to find you. So my point there is that You need to build in, if you're driving this as worship leaders, doing albums or projects with your church, you need to build in the educational component of how are we going to actually recoup our money? Because think about it. If they're a business person, if I was a business owner and you wanted me to, and if I was an investor and you wanted me to invest in you, how stupid would I have to be? Pardon the bluntness, but how stupid would I have to be if you said, I'm going to make this thing. I have no idea how it's going to sell. I don't know how we're going to reach people, but it's going to be awesome, right? And I'm like, sign me up. Where do I send my check? You know, no one's going to do that, right? Now, granted, if like, well, God told me to fund your album, that's a different story. And that's the exception to the rule. So you need to be in a place where you're educating yourself. This is how we're going to market it. So how are you going to promote your album? Yeah.
Just out of curiosity, and maybe you're going to touch on this, but is there an example you can share of a church you know or a church that has gone through maybe a good like process of that? What are the right first steps?
Yeah, yeah. And honestly, I'll answer that. And I would prefer if we just kind of shift gears into like, just ask me your questions. Cause I kind of feel like I don't want this to be canned and me just monologue. I want to help you guys. Let me give you a couple examples. I worked with, I was a music publisher at Vineyard Music in the 90s, which arguably was the height of its success. And I knew enough of the history to know how it started, which was pre-digital age pretty much. Then working with Jesus Culture from just after they recorded their first album. So I've been with Jesus Culture about 6 years, and they're hugely successful now. And so I've seen how they've been able to capitalize with digital tools. And I think that's a major distinction, but let me kind of walk through both. They have some similarities that I think I see similar to every other church that I've seen successfully have music be a significant part of what they do. Number one is they have good music. And I know that sounds stupid to even say, but it's the truth. I mean, think about it. I just saw a study that was saying like 50% of everybody more than 50% on Spotify skip songs. You think, yeah, that's a no-brainer, but think about it. Why are people skipping songs? Because most of what you listen to is junk, right? I mean, if at the end of the day, you either don't connect with the song, you think it's a horrible song, you don't like the artist, whatever it is, you're skipping. And that's the thing with worship music. I mean, you guys, I don't even know if you'd believe me, but if I told you how many worship leaders call me and say, or email me or whatever, and say, honestly, Brock, you've never heard anything like this. This is so good. God's all over it. And no disrespect to anybody, but I'm like, I've heard that a million times yesterday. And it's not a bad thing. It's just like, I know, cause I've written songs. I had one that's commercially published and multiple recordings of it by different artists. So I understand that. I understand when you, and you may have the best song ever written. I'm not saying you don't. I'm saying you can't come from a place of, that you think it's good without an objective. It is good. So to answer the question, you start with good music. Vineyard at the time had great simple songs coming out of the church. And it was literally coming out of the local church. And they were extremely simple. There were three or four chords, you know, and people were so engaged. Then Chris Wimber, like the Wimber family are literally like duplicating them and selling them. Like, you know, Chris, I was friends with Chris when he was alive, and he would say like, we were literally selling out of the back of the car, and it's probably inside the building. But the point is like, people wanted to snatch it up, and it started organically with the local church. But what I've seen, let me take a detour. There's some Foursquare churches around that I represent that where I know part of how they've done it is they've taken that organic local church thing and they've called up the church in Missoula, Montana or Orlando, Florida or whatever and said, hey, we're going to send you some stuff that's happening here and it's really good. So, yeah, other Foursquare churches. And it usually, sorry, is there something I'm doing that? Okay. Part of that organic growth is still organic because it's still happening within your own people, right? And I think that's where it starts is local church blossoms into the surrounding local churches within your same denomination but some church, you know, so many churches now are non-denominational. So then it's more about just alignment. Like, you know, you may not be a Calvary, but you know, you're pretty aligned with, I'm not saying this is true, but pretty aligned with Saddleback. So we're going to send Saddleback some stuff. That's how you get it sung in churches. And to me, what I've seen the success in, like, going back to Vineyard and going to Jesus Culture, Bethel Music now, is you need to get it sung in the churches. And so while songwriters a lot of times are focusing on, I need to get it up on iTunes, the reality is the dent you're going to make getting your album up is like this compared to the dent you're going to make if you can get your song even into 10 different churches. And so to me, when I'm gleaning, because I can ask the Jesus Culture guys to come and give this seminar, and they're going to tell you only what they know, what they saw worked for them. Yeah. I can see 1,000 different examples and kind of push all those together and say, if you will pick or use good songs, start there. If you're going to record them, do the lowest possible budget that's still reasonably acceptable to the ear. Because as soon as I have clients to this day that are spending over $100,000 on an album, and it is like mind-boggling. And I've been doing this for a long time. That is absolutely ridiculous. But it's a reality for them, not just because they have access to the money, but then they're able to do the campaigns that they want, the marketing campaigns, they're able to get the right producer, they're able to get everything like perfect, right? So, but for me, if you're working with a church 5,000 or less and your reach is already that, it is limited, let's be realistic, right? Then you got to tap what I've seen Jesus Culture do really effectively is they were also reaching out through conferences. So even going back 5 years, they were doing youth conferences where they were already like leading worship, and more people were like, we love these songs, how can we get these songs? And they weren't even Jesus Culture songs. They were Chris McClarney and John Mark McMillan and whoever else. So for them, part of how they were able to spread was through using conferences, and then they started putting everything up on YouTube. And so YouTube, the hard part is if you're putting up content you don't own on YouTube, now it's going to get shut down pretty quickly. When they were doing it in 5-10 years ago, between now and that time frame, it wasn't as quick. Now it's really quick because there's the watermarking, data marking, and everything else that can immediately identify a song and take it down. So if you're writing your own songs, you can get them up on YouTube and they won't be taken down. But again, it's kind of like dropping a drop into the ocean. No one's going to see that. So that's why I keep going back to, how are you accessing larger amounts of groups that are not in your local church? Conferences are one easy way. Like if you were leading worship here from songs from your local church, you just captured a few thousand people that are going back all over the country, right? So whoever songs are being played, you know, maybe they're just doing a bunch of Chris Tomlin songs. Hopefully not. I haven't sat in any worship, but you know, hopefully there's some homegrown stuff that's appearing on this stage, because that's helping the people that are here too. But conferences are a great way. If you have effective use of social media, if you have a reach, that's where you could see the newer ones. You know, Bethel does an excellent job of using its social media reach and impacting using those tools. Jesus Culture is a lot less, I don't want this to come out wrong, but it's not a strategy necessarily for them. For them, it's just much more organic, where there are other churches that are fully like, this is our strategy. We have all these followers on Twitter. Here's what we're going to do. But it's not just about we're going to use Twitter, because, you know, everybody's like, go back to MySpace. I'm going to throw this up on MySpace. Yeah, I have 100,000 friends, but none of them are going to buy a single, even a single, but much less an album. So then you got to start looking at, how do you best leverage all the social media, you know, with unlock codes and with competitions and remixes and all that kind of stuff. So that's what I'm seeing now. Look at Hillsong, look at Jesus Culture, two perfect examples with remixes. Because I don't know if you guys are following music outside of worship or whatever your genre is, but like dance music, electronic music is blowing up. I mean, it's still growing. And so remixes are a huge part, and you might think, well, that doesn't really fit in the worship context, but it can. Hillsong and Jesus Culture just proved it. So you also got to think, it's not just about how you access them, but what you're giving them. Because if you're just giving them congregational worship, that's great, but they need more. Like we've become a consuming society, and that's part of why the Spotify data is showing everybody skipping, because we don't have time to listen to a 4-minute song that we don't like, right? Because we only have 4 minutes, so we want to pack 4 songs into that 4 minutes. So giving them different variations of the same song, or giving them just different variations of properties in general. The other way, so one of my clients, Daniel Bashta, who wrote Like a Lion, he was doing great on his own, but he was kind of localized, you know. But then I think it was the Newsboys first. It was the Newsboys or somebody, pretty sure it was the Newsboys. Anyways, if you can find a well-known artist that will record your song, and even if we're talking like not necessarily about you, if you're just kind of like, hey, I have my friends are on the worship team, like how do we get our stuff out there? If you know any better known worship leaders or worship leaders at bigger churches or artists that are already in record deals or whatever, that's I've seen Jesus Culture do that. I've seen Bethel do that. I've seen everybody do that. I mean, going back to Vineyard, all those people, it was really homegrown. It was truly homegrown because you had like all those guys, Carl Tuttle, John Wimber, obviously, because that was his church. But Andy Park and Dan, and anyways, they're all there.
Yeah.
And so they're like, their prime team was all in the same place. And so then as they started to move out, they were planting churches. All of this to say, the way that you spread music is the way that you spread anything, any idea. And in this day and age, the available tools that are the most cost effective are the social media tools. Most people use them ineffectively. I mean, that's the truth. Most people have, you might have 10,000 friends, but it doesn't mean you could get 10,000 friends to do anything, right? And so part of that is just about conversion. If you have 100 friends that'll, every single one of them will buy, you know, a download versus 10,000 friends, but only 1% of them buy, you're more powerful with your 100 friends, right? So a lot of that is if you're going to be like a Jesus Culture of Bethel, is looking at what tools do we actually know how to use well? And I would say the focus right now is social media, but looking at the distribution outlets like Spotify, Pandora, iTunes through CD Baby or TuneCore, or if you can get a direct deal with iTunes, all of that stuff is just about making it available. It's not about getting it heard or make or promoting it. So sorry to be long-winded, but does that help?
Yeah. Are you aware of DistroKid?
DistroKid?
Yeah, it's like CD Baby. They're a smaller company. Basic rates. They just submit your songs, upload them, they put them on iTunes.
It doesn't ring a bell.
Okay.
But they're like that. I think if the question is if I was familiar with them, would I recommend them? I think then it's about are the rates good and do they have the direct relationship? Because TuneCore and CD Baby are the established ones with relationship with iTunes. And you may be everywhere, Amazon and everywhere else, but you know, iTunes is by far the largest on that front. So this one, DistroKid, do they have relationship? Maybe they do. Because if they don't, then you're even worse off because at least with CD Baby or TuneCore, you may have the possibility of getting a lucky random banner or something like that. So something to factor in.
At what point do you need to consider, I forget if it was this one or the last one, you started talking about like, you know, the church's tax exempt status. I mean, at what point do you need to consider, okay, maybe this is even like funding the CDs, this is maybe something the church should be doing, should we set up some kind of outside the church organization that's focused on the music side of things? I mean, at what point, because I felt like with our project, it was like funded by the church, you know, hopefully it'll kind of get up to around even, you know, most of the base coming from our church, you know. I'm thinking that doesn't sound like something we would need to really set up an outside. But at what point do you need to start asking that?
I think there's a couple points. One would be the second you think you're going to do more than one album or more than a couple. Like if it's going to be a systematic thing, you need to consider it first, just right out of the gate. Because you'll run into too many nonprofit tax implications if you don't start considering it when you know this is going to be something you do. The other would be even if you did one album and it did really well, then you got to consider, okay, now we potentially are on the radar for the IRS to be audited.
Yeah.
If we're going to do anything else, that would be the time. If you know that's the only project you're doing, then it wouldn't make any sense to now separate it out because the damage is already done. But I would say any form of forward-looking consistency, like this is what we're going to do, anytime you're making good money on it, anytime you're having different structures with your songwriters, getting because as soon as you start paying royalties, it starts to look like a private benefit.
Yeah.
And so the church may say, well, we're not worried about it yet because it's too small of an issue. And on, like, even if you generated $100,000, they may say, hey, even if it was unrelated business income, the tax on that is not, it's such a minor detail that we're just not going to worry about it. Because you won't lose your tax-exempt status over that.
Yeah.
But those three are the key. When it's going to be a consistent process, but I can tell you there are churches that I represent now that are doing this all the time, and they're still, some of them still haven't broken off that activity because they just feel like we're fine. And the church's charter is broad enough to where they feel like the way that they handle it internally is fine. And the other thing we've done is with some of these churches is we break out personal ministries. So we'd form like a nonprofit for you. And so we could filter the royalties from the church nonprofit to your personal nonprofit. And then it's your problem to deal with the taxation issue. So.
Are nonprofits not allowed to make, I thought as a nonprofit, you can make money. Mm-hmm. Just as long as no one, it's not a business where someone owns the money. Like a church can make income from mm-hmm. rentals, from mm-hmm. sales, from everything, as long as it's going to fulfill their mission. Mm-hmm. As long as not one person or entity is benefiting from that money other than the church.
Generally speaking, but that's the point. If you wrote a song, if you wrote 10 songs, recorded an album, and now the church is receiving the income and paying you songwriter royalties, arguably that's a private benefit to you.
Okay.
So that
if the church were to retain all rights and you got nothing as part of, you know, if that's your contract, then
nothing to worry about. And until it got to a point where arguably there's a point where the church is just making too much money that it looks like a business rather than a nonprofit. But that's, there's so many variables and so many arguments to be made with, you probably wouldn't have that problem. And especially because statistically, your albums are not going to sell. And I don't mean that with, you know, there's no preconceived judgment. It's statistically, most albums aren't going to sell well anyways. And so for it to become a problem for a church, the church would have to sell a ton of albums. And one quick thing back to you. Part of the structure that you're dealing with is the church going to receive the money? Because if you can find a way to receive all the songwriting income direct to you, that's a way to avoid the church. It's a way to mitigate the risk to the church.
So the church even would pay for it, but then all the money goes somewhere else?
Well, see, the church isn't paying for your songs, right? They're your property, so yeah. You're licensing them to the church. So arguably, the church can pay you fair market for that license. You say you could use my song, and in return, the church says, we'll pay you this royalty. Arguably, that's a fair market exchange, so it's not private benefit. Because now, it can be private benefit if they're now promoting the album that makes you money. Because they're promoting something about you. So my point is that if you can make the money not flow through the church, so it flows direct to you. For example, ASCAP pays songwriters directly, and it pays the publishers directly. If you're both the songwriter and publisher, it will pay 100% of the money to you.
Yeah.
But if you're not the publisher, the publishing money goes to the church. So that's something you could talk through with the church. Like, how do we handle income? Because like an iTunes sale going through TuneCore, there's one check, right? It goes to whoever's managing the money. If the church is administrating all this stuff, which the churches usually want to, I mean, and I would say by far the majority of churches that I work with say, we want to handle the money. We don't trust you, whatever. So they get the check from TuneCore, and then they say, here's your royalty. As soon as they say, here's your royalty, that's what raises the issue. Is this private benefit? And do you have, you'll pay the personal tax on it, but the private benefit question is, is it consistent with the church's mission? And most churches don't have a mission to promote an individual, right?
Yeah.
It's not like a whatever your name is, quote, ministry,
yeah.
Right? So.
We kind of skipped this on the last meeting. How would you advise us in that regard?
Are you talking about point nine in the
yes,
last one?
Exactly.
So church-based publishing companies. I'm sorry. I totally lost my train of thought. Can you repeat?
Church is interested in becoming our own
publishing company, right?
What do we do?
Okay. You want to be your own publishing company. First thing is at least get a basic understanding of what that means. And the starting point is a publisher's job is to exploit the properties that they control. So if we're not just talking about music, maybe we're talking about books and devotionals. The point is their job is to exploit and to protect. So the church should know how to protect, meaning how to get a copyright registration. Just really practically speaking, they need to get copyright registrations for the copyrights. Number two, how do we exploit this stuff? Number three, how do we account for this stuff? Meaning, can our current accounting system handle royalties coming in, payments coming in? Because, you know, some churches are really basic and, like, maybe they're using QuickBooks because it works, because we know it's only like tithing or this or that. Once you get into royalties, not only do you know, you have to know how to bring those in, but also you have to have the formulas built out. Like, you have 10 songwriters, how do they all get paid? So you have to, there has to be somebody that understands the math. And I know that that sounds like, well, this is a publishing company. If you don't have somebody that understands the math, you're going to have major, major problems. So maybe it's the in-house accountant. Maybe there's somebody that you could train to do just royalty accounting. But the point is, TuneCore sends you a check for $10,000. What do you do with that $10,000? That person needs to understand. Well, they get their understanding from your contracts with your songwriters and your artists, right? So that person has to be connected to you. I've seen this many, many times. The accountant has no clue what the deals are. So you have music production and songwriting over here and the accounting department's over here. They get a check for 10 grand. And they're like, what do we do? They call you and you're like, well, I think he gets 10%, I get 5%, and then we split everything else with the writers. And then you find out, no, the writers are only getting 9.1 cents and you do all the math wrong. So you have to have somebody that understands the math and is capable of accounting. If you have those parts, protection, somebody that knows how to exploit, and we're gonna let me circle back to that, and somebody that knows how to do accounting, you're okay to start. Okay. Now, how do you exploit it? This is really what the church publisher needs to know and needs to understand. Well, first of all, they need to have the contractual relationship with their songwriters. So you need to have some form of publishing contract, whether that's a full blown deal or it's just a one page understanding. Whatever it is, there needs to be an understanding between the church and the songwriter. Because the church is acting as the publishing company in this regard. There has to be that contract. Once there is, how are we going to compensate songwriters? Now, typically, I'll tell you this, out in the marketplace, secular and Christian alike, if you have a standard publishing deal, it is what you might hear 50-50 deal or a straight publishing deal. What it means is I write a song, you're the publisher. I assign my rights to you 100%. You now own the song, not me. You own it. But in return, you will pay me 50% of net profits. So that's your standard deal out there in the marketplace. Your church may want to just start with that. Now, your church may say, oh, but we want to be gracious or generous to our songwriters and we'll give them 60%. That's fine. But if you go below 50%, you have to understand you're starting to break an industry tradition that anybody that's been in this industry is going to say, there the church is trying to take again. And then I'm telling you, from working with churches, this is out there. There's this idea that churches are stealing from songwriters. I think part of it, a huge part of it, is churches just don't know any better, right? But I would say start with the 50-50 deal. So that makes it really simple. So for every dollar that comes in, what do you do with that? Well, that doesn't mean your TuneCore money. That's not the dollar I'm talking about. When TuneCore comes in, if it's a $9.99 sale for 10 songs. You get, what, $7, right? $7 of that seven for 10 songs is 9.1 cents times 10, so 91 cents. That's your songwriting pool of money. Of that 91 cents, you're splitting it 50% to the publisher, which is the church, and 50% to the songwriters. So if there's one, they get that 91 cents in half. And if there's 10, you split them up, you know, whatever proportion of the songs.
$7, mm-hmm. 91 cents.
Is your publishing money?
Half of which goes to the songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
What happened to the rest of that $6?
So that's the label side. That's the label stuff. So the label is the one that funded the recording, right? And that's the church. So the label says, the church says, well, we're supposed to pay the worship leader 15% of net. Let's say that's your artist royalty. Does that make sense or no?
Oh, so you're talking about a separate deal.
Mm-hmm. No, it's a separate contract.
Separate contract. So, mm-hmm. We're starting with churches funding the album, mm-hmm. right? Okay, they fund the album. They're also the publisher.
Right.
Okay, so they're also the publisher. The publishing deal is 9.1 cents, of which half goes back to the publisher, and then the other half of the 9.1 goes to the songwriter.
Yep. So when I see this, can you see that? This is the sale price. This is your iTunes cut. So then we get a check for $7 as a church, right? So right away, we want to divvy this up. This is publisher, and this is label. Label money, publisher money. The publisher money, let's say it's a 10-song album, is 9.1 cents per song. So 10 songs, we have a total of 91 cents, right? Of this, 50% goes to your writer. 50% goes to your publisher. Your publisher is the church. So we'll round all this up in a second. But whatever that is, that's 45 and a half, right, cents, I think. So each of these get 45 and a half cents. Okay, so now over here, what's the difference here is 609, right? So this being label money, first of all, are you recouping your budget? If you spent $5,000, just so you know, normally you would take this out before you'd worry about your recoupment. That would be the normal industry procedure. So you have $6.09. If it's a $5,000 budget that you need to recoup, you're basically every dollar that comes in, every 609 that comes in, you are putting that towards recoupment until you hit recoupment. Once you do, let's just say that your artist royalty, your worship leaders, is 15%. And I could say that 50% is within the range of, you know, anywhere from 10. I mean, you can see some artist deals at 25%. But if you're around 15%, maybe 18%, you're good.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yep.
Let's say in the case where the church makes it clear that we own everything, songwriter, instrumentalist, you get nothing.
Okay.
Right? You guys are just part of the church. You guys are staff of the church.
Okay.
They made that album that way, then we stop here. The church is also acting as the label. They get the full shebang.
That would be the $7 straight to the church.
Okay. Oh, so we even skip that portion because it's basically not publishing deal. They don't have a
publishing. There is no publishing deal. According to what you said, the church owns everything, songs and recordings, everything. So the church gets the $7.
So would that be simpler for a church to do, like, hey, we'll pay you guys a salary. Everything just belongs to us, so keep it nice and easy.
It's much simpler, but I will tell you this. Once you, as a songwriter, as an artist, you're going to look at this and say, but my salary isn't enough.
Right.
Because if this album sells 10,000, 5,000, 10,000 units, which would be decent, but not great, you're not really going to care, right? But what if this album sells 50,000 units, 100,000 units? That's when you're saying, well, if my salary is broken up, like I literally got paid $500 to record, but the church just paid, you know, 2 million. Are you going to say, well, that's fair, right? And it's not just about incentive. It's also about fairness. And yeah, this complicates everything, but this is how the industry does it. So when the question was, you know, if we want to be a publisher, how do we do it? I'm kind of telling you how do you be a publisher and a label at the same time. Draw a line here. It's the same organization, same church, but this is where the church is acting like a publisher. This is where the church is acting like a label. So you can see that for every 609 over here, the publisher's only getting 91 cents. So if they're two different organizations, then they're making a lot, the publisher's making a lot less, but in reality, it's one church. So yes, if the writers and artists get nothing, $7 to the church. If the writers are being paid a normal royalty and the artists are being paid a normal royalty, then it's going to look like this. So what I would say is, first of all, your 609 goes towards recoupment.
So before any royalties are paid, recoupment gets
100%.
Updated.
Yeah.
Except for the writers. The writers
right.
Get their money.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be the normal process. Writers get their money regardless. Can you see okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Next thing is, you don't calculate normally the 15% against the 609. Now you got to factor in, this is digital revenue. But if it was, let's take a detour, if this was physical CDs that you were selling like at this conference, let's say that it's $1.10 per unit, let's just put it on the side. Take out your Yeah, your production costs, manufacturing. So now, if you're going to calculate a royalty, it'd be against 609 minus 110, right, as opposed to 609. So digital, you don't have that cost. Recoupment, you got to think about, is there anything other than the budget that we might need to take out? Now, you may have said, well, we're going to put $2,000 towards marketing, but that's not a cost that's, you haven't spent all $2,000. Maybe it's bits and pieces here and there. So maybe you might say there's a per unit sort of marketing charge, but otherwise you would just recoup it and your marketing would be wrapped up in the rest of your budget. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Okay. So whatever you're deducting, the point is all your deductions go here. Then you'll have a net.
And so it's usually done on a per unit basis, to keep
things simple? Well, yeah, you have to.
Recoupment and marketing
are
usually a per unit?
No. If this $609 comes in for one album, it goes straight towards recoupment, but you're going to get a check for whatever, $10,000. You take out all your publishing royalties, whatever's left. Let's say it's $9,000. That just goes straight towards recoupment. It's not like you would say this unit has 42 cents, this unit has 42 cents.
So then you fill the bucket of recoupment, pay that off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's left, 15%?
Well, so let's say that our net now, let's just say for the sake of discussion, our net is $5. Okay? 15% of $5 goes to your artist. And the balance, your 85%, it's really whatever's left over, so you don't view it as an 85%, is your label, which is actually your church. So what's 15% of $5, it's 65 cents, 75, somewhere in there. So 75 cents per unit to the artist, right? So when you think about it from an artist perspective, that's a lot, 45 cents per song that's for 10 songs. So that 45 is divided by 10, right? So there's a lot less money over here on an album sale than there is over here because the artist is getting 15%. The church is going to make whatever's left, so let's say $475, just for ease of reference. So $475 is the label profit, the church profit.
So labels are where it's at.
If you're looking at it from this perspective, and this would be like a very generalized approach, very simplified approach. Now, this is if you do everything yourself, if you're the church. But let's say that you say, well, we need help selling this, so we're going to do a deal with like an Integrity Music or a Capital or whatever. This is not what your numbers look like. At the end of the day, you as the church might walk away with 42 cents per unit. But the idea is that you're taking a smaller piece of a bigger pie because they're going to sell a lot more units than you. But you'll never get $7 from a label that you're – when I say from a label, then in that case the church is the artist. You know what I mean? So the church isn't getting 15%. The church may get it depends on how you structure it with like a larger label, but there's a trickle-down effect. And the thing is as a church, you're not deducting for like packaging deduction, new media deductions. A lot of labels just say for whatever reason, we're only paying on 85% of sales just because we feel like it. So when you talk to artists that have been in the industry and they say, oh, the system screwed me, pardon the expression, part of it is because you do these deals with larger labels and you'll see like a dollar comes in, we're only paying on 85% of that dollar just because. So now we're already down to $850. And we're going to deduct 15% for what we call new media and packaging. Maybe we combine that. So now we're down. Pretty soon you're down to like 42 cents. 15% of 42 cents is a lot different than 15% of a buck. You know what I mean?
So sorry. On a side note, they always talk about Hollywood accounting for mm-hmm. movies and how they barely ever make mm-hmm. profit. Is this because of the similar idea to movies and how movies are paid?
It has some similarities, but not really. With filmmaking, there's a lot of differences, but one of the big differences you're going to see is with your marketing. Like, a film might say, well, we had $100 million worth of marketing. The film actually maybe cost $10 million. The marketing budget, $200 million. So they have to recoup that money. I mean, that's why the film needs to make $300 million to make a profit. When in reality, the film could make $100 million and make a profit. But part of it is where you're padding costs. And you could do that the same in a record deal. You could pad costs and expenses. You could say, yeah, our marketing budget is $50,000. but then you realize they're using in-house marketing people, so they're never actually writing a check, right? So if you're marketing department and you're the pastor and you say, hey, we want to promote this album, do some marketing for us, it's not like you're going to take your salary and put that in recoupment. We're just saying, oh, yeah, we put $50,000 towards recoupment or towards marketing. So, yeah.
A quick question before we finish, if no one else has any questions. You talked about the risks for church-based publishing companies.
Yeah.
What are the risks? Are you talking mostly about that nonprofit status?
That's a big area, but there's also the infringement. There's a few. So nonprofit status is one big one, and we've kind of talked about that. If you have specifics on that, I can try and answer them. The other area is, you know, in the earlier session, the question was, hey, I know this one church that did a song and then kind of involved another song that was potentially an infringing use. Anytime a church gets into this business, infringement's always a risk because your worship leaders, it's not like you guys are going and clearing this with church leadership. Hey, I want to do this song, but I kind of want to include this, you know, secular song, or maybe it's a song that, you know, an independent worship leader wrote that's not a part of CCLI. So infringement is a risk because the church is going to get sued. You know, if you release an album and it has an infringing song, you may get named, but your church will definitely get named. So that's a huge risk for the church. The other is just sort of all the contractual complications that come with misunderstanding. So, you know, you did a project already with your church. If you decided that you were done with your church and wanted to leave, and they didn't give you 15%, for example, and you say, well, I want my money, and they say no, that's another risk. It's like these ongoing legal risks. So disputes with the people involved in the project, that's one. So contractual type disputes, your infringement issues, and then your nonprofit issues. And a lesser, but still consideration, is your PR issues. There are churches out there that are totally anti, you know, churches making money. They're totally anti, you know, doing this kind of thing in the church. They think it's money changing and they want to flip the tables. So you got to consider, are we going to get any backlash? Maybe you will, maybe you don't care, but at least consider it.
Yeah. Interesting. This stuff is fascinating.
It is. It's fascinating. I agree. And this is, I mean, honestly, this is just such a piece of the iceberg. Because here's the other thing. Let me just touch on this real quick. What do you do if your songs are in Spotify? Because you're not getting $7 from Spotify for one album sale. You might be getting 50 cents for a million streams, and you don't even know which songs were streamed, right? So some of the problem that you're going to run into, this being the easiest way that I could explain it to you, because we're dealing with a very simple transaction, but as soon as you start thinking about revenue that comes from subscriptions, from like where you can't automatically attribute it to, do we even know which song? Because here's the other thing. Let me make two points if you guys are okay on time. If it's streaming and you have no idea where the money, what the money's attributable to, then how are you going to give your songwriters 50%? 50% of what? Because here we know it's 9.1 cents. When it's streaming revenue, we don't even know what's attributable. So part of the problem is, well, then we're going to have to come up with an explanation for that. So if a dollar comes in from Spotify and we have no idea what song, what album, do we even pay the songwriters? Do we even pay the artists? Do we say, well, this is about 10% of this. So let's say 10% of the Spotify revenue is attributable to publishing and 90% is attributable to the label. And then we kind of figure out, but you're navigating that on the fly. You know what I mean? Because there aren't really established rules for that yet. Certainly not in the church. So consider that. This is an easy example. Figure out, what are we going to do about money that we can't figure out what it's attributable to? Do we have a formula? And maybe 10%, 90% is a good formula for you to apply. You could do that. The other thing too, 15%, but there's 10 song album and you three led. You did three songs, four songs, three songs. Is that up to 10? Yeah. So do you each get 15%? Do you split 15%? And I see churches struggle with this one like crazy too, because what if you did three songs, but you're more important, so you get 10%? And you did five songs, but you're less important, so you get, you know, 2%. And then, you know, whatever. The point is I think I recommend for churches that you kind of calculate this more on a per song basis. And what I mean by that is, rather than saying, okay, if we get 15% of our net being $5, rather than say 15%, and then we give you five of that, you four of that, you three of that, whatever, do the math, but it being unequal. What if we said, well, because the problem that you're running into is, what if your song takes off, but you played less than these two guys, but their songs didn't take off, and it's not even their songs. It just happens to be the ones they led on. You know what I mean? Because in every album, there's always one song that stands out, right? Or a couple. So what I suggest you do here is consider that if you have multiple worship leaders on an album, you either say, this is your song. Song A, you get 15% of. Song B, you get 15% of. So it's a per song 15%, which means it still totals 15%. That makes sense, right, everybody? But then it's a lot easier if one song is successful, you know it's you're getting paid. The other two aren't getting paid. Now how do we deal with that? Because you guys are thinking, well, that's not fair because we played on the album. So the other approach would be to say there's 15% per song. No matter who led, this is the breakdown. So on song A, it's 7 plus 5 plus whatever. On song B, it's 10 plus, you know what I'm saying? Like you break it up per song. Yeah. But if you do it on a per album basis, then it better be in a way that's not going to make each other jealous. Because I'm telling you time and time and time again, churches come to me, worship leaders come to me. Why are they getting paid more? And my song is selling 10 times more than their song. So something factored.
You've been listening to a seminar by Brock Scheinen entitled Songwriters and the Church, recorded at the Worship God West 2014 conference. For more information on Worship God conferences and Sovereign Grace Ministries, please visit our website at www.sovereigngraceministries.org.